Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all, welcome back. Next up is Sina Tusi, who put together this profile of Ashton Carter, the very soon-to-be-confirmed new Secretary of Defense, replacing Chuck Hagel at the Pentagon. The profile is at RightWeb. And, well, just Google RightWeb because the URL is all screwy. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Sina?
Hey, Scott. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I really appreciate you joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, yeah. So good work on this thing, and much appreciated. I learned a hell of a lot. I guess, can you just start with the basic background of who's this guy? They say he's not a party guy. He's a technocrat. And I don't know if that's supposed to be to his credit or exactly what that means, but he's one of them, right?
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, well, I mean, he's definitely more of a, I mean, his background is in academia, so he is kind of more of a technocrat. Like, he has a PhD in theoretical physics from Oxford. He also has a BA in medieval history from Yale. But he does seem generally a little more pragmatic and not as ideological, you know, like super like neocon-y, but he is, you know, he's definitely dedicated to, like, you know, maintaining U.S. hegemony across the world. And so he was, you know, President Obama's Deputy Secretary of Defense from August 2011 to December 2013. And in that role, he was in charge of the Pentagon's budget. And he really, he was against sequestration. He wanted to maintain a higher budget. He didn't want any budget cuts. He really kind of, you know, tried to manage this pivot to Asia. He's been more aggressive on China. He's, you know, he's reached out to India, and, you know, he negotiated all these arms deals with India as well during his time as Deputy Secretary of Defense. And so, yeah, he's definitely been committed to just, you know, maintaining that kind of just U.S., you know, great power status and, you know, hegemony across the world. Yeah. And then so he was also, you know, before that, he was the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics in the first Obama term from April 2011 to October 2011, or from April 2009 to October 2011. And in this role, he was like the Pentagon's main weapons purchaser. And he was actually referred to as like Wolfie in reference to Paul Wolfowitz, because Paul Wolfowitz, you know, also came from academia, and people were kind of worried that he would be similar to Paul Wolfowitz. And, but, you know, during that time, he didn't really have, you know, weapons experience or like weapons development or acquisition experience. And he faced criticism for like approving a lot of bad programs and things like that. And, but overall, you know, he's been in the Pentagon for many years, including during the Clinton administration. He was the Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy, which saw him deal with nuclear arms control issues and like disarming a lot of the former Soviet states and stuff like that. Mm.
So. Hey, let's, when we get to reviewing all this, let's start right there. Back in the Clinton years, that makes me, I don't know, I guess I want to look at a silver lining kind of thing there, that if he, as you say in there, was working with Belarus and Ukraine on their nuclear disarmament, he must have been working in close cooperation with the Russians. He must know somebody in Moscow on a first-name basis, right? Hopefully. But then the one part of the Senate confirmation hearing that I was able to catch the other day, he was saying, oh, yes, I definitely think we should be arming the Ukrainians. Not with nukes, but still in the midst of this crisis with Russia. So I don't know. It seemed like I was hoping maybe familiarity might be a possible opening for a ratcheting down of tensions here, you know.
It's interesting because I was just reading that. So, yeah, during his time during the Bill Clinton administration, he actually opposed NATO expansion, Like, he favored this partnership for peace approach with former Secretary of Defense William Perry during the 90s. But, yeah, I mean, as you've been saying, you know, he's been very hawkish during his Senate confirmation hearings this week. He's been saying, you know, we should have, you know, he's inclined to provide defensive arms to Ukraine. He wants to, like, finish the job in Afghanistan and not necessarily, like, you know, remove all U.S. troops. He said he doesn't want to speed up closing Guantanamo either. So, I mean, he's definitely more of a hardliner than Hagel, Chuck Hagel. But, yeah, and he's, you know, even this week, you know, like, John McCain and Joe Lieberman, like, they've been singing his praises and been saying, like, we look forward to having you. And, like, Joe Lieberman, Joe Lieberman said he's bonded personally with Ash Carter. So, I mean, he's got that going for him as well.
Good times. Yeah. Anybody who's nicknamed as Paul Wolfowitz's mini-me, that's got to just be wonderful for all of us. All right. So, now, I guess, here's something that I didn't see mentioned here, and you may have an update for it at some point, but has he taken a position on ground troops in Iraq and or Syria? Because this is a place where Dempsey has felt free, apparently, to do kind of a McChrystal Petraeus maneuver and try to roll Obama into escalating the war more than the president wants to and has done already.
Yeah. No, from stuff I've read, he's actually opposed ground troops in Syria and Iraq, at least as of like just before this all happened, before his confirmation hearing, before he was nominated. Actually, last summer, he was on the Charlie Rose show, and he actually said he believes in he thinks there should be a political solution in Syria, and he also said that Iran is actually part of the solution in Iraq and Syria, surprisingly.
So, and he was calling for a negotiated solution in Syria before the fall of Mosul and the declaration of the caliphate a year ago, you say. That's interesting.
This was last summer. I think it was right around the time. I forget exactly if it was before or after the fall of Mosul.
Oh, okay.
He was on the Charlie Rose show around that, just last summer, around that time.
Even still.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable for someone who works in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I don't approve of the work with Iran part, but certainly, you know, maybe lay off them a little bit in the middle of this.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of Iran, you cite two different reports that he wrote, one in 2006, or, you know, signed his name to anyway, one in 06 and one in 08. And I think the one in 08, the more alarming of the two, but they both seem pretty bad as far as the position that he took on Iran and their nuclear program, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah, in 08, he basically co-authored a report with the Bipartisan Policy Center, which is this kind of hawkish think tank that, despite its, like, credentials, is, like, you know, this kind of bipartisan, you know, organization that's brought together all these people. It's a very hawkish organization, actually. And so he co-authored this report in 2008 with, like, basically these, you know, these neoconservatives like Michael Rubin from American Enterprise Institute and people like Dennis Ross, who's a former Obama advisor on Iran, who's very hawkish as well. And yeah, that report basically, you know, it said like Iran, you know, aims to build nuclear weapons and the U.S. has to bolster its military presence in the Middle East. And it even repeated this kind of debunked idea that, you know, Iran's leaders are like these just kind of irrational extremists, and it said like we can't really contain them with like Cold War deterrence type just mechanisms. Like, so the report basically said Iran can't even have a peaceful enrichment program because of that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, and it called for, you know, just applying more just harsh repercussions on Iran if it doesn't just scale back its nuclear program and just meet the terms that they, you know, bring forth towards Iran and stuff like that. So that was a very aggressive report.
Yeah. So now, as you note in the profile here, this is in contradiction to the opinion of the intelligence community that they put out in the NIE at the fall of 2007. So, well, music's playing. So when we get back, I'll ask you, here's a preview of what I'll ask you when we get back. I'll ask you whether this was part of a campaign to contradict that CIA NIE, or just an honest disagreement, or exactly what role that played politically then, and then more about Ashton Carter with Sina Tusi right after this. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking with Sina Tusi from rightweb.irc-online.org. Just Google up rightweb. It'll come right up. And it may have been 15 minutes or 30 since I told you how much I love rightweb. This is such a great project. It's been there for more than a decade now, and it's just the best profiles you could ever hope for on every single one of the neocons, all of the worst think tanks, and all of what they're up to, and all the institutions, and where they get their money. And you should spend your whole freaking weekend trolling through RightWeb. It will make you smart. It's awesome. All right, so now that I got that out of the way, I'm talking with Sina Tusi, and we're talking about this latest one, or I don't know how long it's been here, newly updated for sure. Ashton Carter, the former Deputy Secretary of Defense and very soon to be confirmed new Secretary of Defense replacing Chuck Hagel. And so at the break, we were talking, Sina, about the report that he signed on to that came out in 2008 with a bunch of AEI guys and, veterans of the Office of Special Plans and them. And they came together and wrote this thing, seemingly in contradiction to the NIE of 2007, saying, oh, yes, indeed, Iran is making nuclear weapons, and their nuclear program is a nuclear weapons program. Somehow, I don't know if they just fudged that assertion in there or how exactly they try to prove it in the report. But what I'm really curious about is whether this was part of a concerted effort at the time that was being made to push back on the national intelligence estimate of 07 and try to somehow discredit that as bad intelligence and that actually Team B really knows better and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, there was a lot of backlash against that 2007 NIE, and that NIE was actually, from what I understand, it was kind of a move by the, you know, members of the intelligence community to kind of undermine the Bush administration's effort to like go into war with Iran. Like, I know a lot of people from stuff I've read in the Bush administration, among these like neoconservative and hardliner circles, like they were like furious with that NIE report. So yeah, this, you know, the timing of this, you know, Bipartisan Policy Center report, it's very much, you know, we can assume that, you know, it was meant to kind of, you know, challenge that NIE or just say it was untrue or something. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think they were trying to contradict it, but I mean, you know, that's against the reality of what the situation has been. Like, you know, we've had countless, you know, IAEA reports of Iran's nuclear program, and, you know, it's heavily inspected, and especially in the past year and a half with the Geneva agreement and the interim nuclear agreement, like, you know, Iran is not developing a nuclear weapon. Their program right now is very scaled back. Even during that time, they various reports, you know, intelligence reports by the United States, even by Israel, you know, they confirmed that Iran had not made the decision to actually build a nuclear bomb. Like, they had a nuclear program, but, you know, they weren't enriching uranium at, you know, levels necessary to build the bomb, like, ever. They've never enriched uranium to 90%, which is what that would be. And yeah, I mean, so these people, they, you know, they were just trying to drum up an excuse for war, you know, like this Bipartisan Policy Center thing was basically a roadmap to war.
Yeah, that's bad news that he signed on to that. I mean, it's sort of, you know, the best we can hope for, like with the Ukraine answer, is, yeah, you got to tell these Republicans what they want to hear for a minute to make your money and move up the chain. But maybe he's a little bit softer in reality. That's about the best we got. But boy, if he's and this is the guy who's replacing Hagel right as they're supposedly negotiating a nuclear deal with the Iranians. So did he say in his hearing how well he supported Obama's effort on that?
You know, I didn't actually see him discuss Iran. I looked it up and stuff. He didn't really explicitly discuss anything related to Iran during his hearing.
Well, they didn't ask him about the nuclear talks, huh?
I mean, it's weird. Yeah, I mean, I looked for it and I didn't see, you know, any specific like statements he made regarding and just Iran. I think he did just generally, like Washington Post has this line in their story about his hearing that, basically, yeah, I think he wanted to take a more aggressive approach in Ukraine and, Iran possibly. Actually, I'm not sure if I'm reading this right. No, I don't, it doesn't really mention anything about Iran, the story I'm reading. So yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, he didn't, I'm not sure if they didn't ask him anything or maybe just didn't give an answer that, you know, these people have chosen to report.
You do say in here though that he also has written that, you know, war with Iran would be no picnic and we don't really want any part of that. And, you know, more cautious things along those lines,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, so that's the thing. So in 2009, he basically, you know, co-authored another report that basically said that, you know, in Iraq, the U.S. attack on Iran would be very, like, counterproductive in terms of just scaling back their nuclear program. Like, you know, Iran would just rebuild it or they would have to attack, like, you know, repeatedly over time. And he even said, like, an Israeli strike would have a negative impact for the United States. But so yeah, he was kind of warned of the consequences of an attack on Iran. But he also, in that report, he still said that, you know, military action must be an integral part of just any strategy aimed at, you know, halting Iran's, like, you know, presumed nuclear bomb program or just nuclear program, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so he's, man, basically sounds like a pretty centrist kind of a guy, really, if that's where the, it seems, I'm not saying moderate, but
yeah, he just doesn't seem super ideological, and he's definitely more of a technocrat. He comes from academia, you know, so he's not like, you know, somebody like Donald Rumsfeld, obviously. But at the same time, I think it seems like he's definitely more hawkish than Chuck Hagel was.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it remains to be seen how much he can actually do in the, you know, these last year and a half of the Obama administration. I feel like, you know, Obama, like, you know, this is Obama's fourth Secretary of Defense. So at the same time, you know, Obama doesn't want a fifth Secretary of Defense in the next year and a half. So maybe that'll give Carter some more leverage to do stuff he wants to do. But at the same time, it seems like, you know, the Obama White House, they kind of dominate the decision making on foreign policy issues. Like, you know, his NSA advisor, Susan Rice, or his chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, like they really have much more control, it seems like, of foreign policy, or at least they have had in the past 6 years, than like the Secretary of Defense. So I'm not sure how much of a change we'll be seeing in terms of policy and stuff.
By the way, did he take a position in 2011 on regime change in Libya?
You know what? I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
All right. Well, that would be interesting to know too.
That's something we'll definitely look up.
Can you tell us a little bit about his relationship with Goldman Sachs?
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's had a lot of business, you know, ties and stuff. And he was an advisor to Goldman Sachs for a time. And he's basically, you know, he's like a theoretical physicist. So I think he deals more with like those technical issues. But yeah, he was an advisor for Goldman Sachs. He worked for the Lincoln Laboratories and Draper Laboratory as well for MIT. And actually last year when he left his position as Deputy Secretary of Defense, like last September, he went on to work for this corporation called the Merkel Foundation, and he was a senior executive director there. And he was working on like just globalization issues and how technology can affect globalization. And I think he advised them on stuff like that. So I mean, he's got a lot of business ties as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just the military-industrial complex. You know, all these people are tied to all these different just businesses and military groups and stuff.
Yeah, it's that revolving door.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now, can you tell us a little bit more about his role in pushing the pivot to China thing?
Yeah, so he was definitely, you know, as, you know, Obama came in his first term and, you know, announced his pivot to China, like the U.S. wants to, like, lower its footprint in the Middle East and just, you know, China's the rising power. We need to go contain them, like, maintain our own hegemony in the Pacific area. So, and he led that, you know, he's led that effort from the Pentagon for the past couple of years. Like he really enhanced U.S. ties with India, because that's a key part of the U.S.'s strategy, which is pivot to India and pivot to Asia. They really want to, you know, bring India closer to the U.S. sphere of influence and kind of use it to counterbalance and contain China. And so he, he established all these defense ties with India. They created something called the Defense Trade and Technology Initiative, where they sold weapons to India and military technology. And he's even, he even said during his confirmation hearing that China's causing issues in the Pacific and they need to be contained and stuff. So he's definitely going to be more aggressive in the Pacific.
All right. Well, we're all out of time. Thank you very much for your time. I sure appreciate it, Cena.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks a lot.
All right, y'all. That's Cena Tusi. Check out RightWeb. Just Google it. The URL's a mess. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.